All right. Hey, everybody. My name is Travis Peterson. I'm data scientist at MLB. Thank you so much for coming out this early on a Sunday morning. Appreciate it. So today we'll be talking about StatCast hit probability and some things we're excited about, kind of the next iteration. Specifically, we're adding in hit direction and sprint speed. I'll kind of walk through how we got to that final model. All right. Okay, so what is StatCast hit probability? It was rolled out last year. It uses exit velocity and launch angle to predict the probability of being a hit. It was based on a lot of great research by Tom Tango. We have here a kind of a breakdown of batted balls, but it's also an important thing to note is that we're trying to strip out context. We're not taking into account ballpark factors. We're not taking into account defensive positioning in the current model. So how does it perform? And as you can see from the heat maps here, it does a very good job of capturing the overall trend of how exit velocity and launch angle have an effect on hit probability. So on the left, we have the actual. On the right, we have the current model. And you can see we're capturing the overall trend. It may be a little hard to see, but one area for improvement is the barrel zone. You can see there may be some over-smoothing in that area. The red should be a little redder in some areas, and it's a little clearer in the bottom right where we have a calibration chart. And where we'd like to see that is as those orange dots perfectly aligned with that 45-degree angle line. And you can see at the top end, we're underperforming. And what that means is, for example, if we have a bin of balls that we're predicting at 80%, the real probability is about 85%. So there's a miscalibration issue that we became aware of. And that we'd like to fix. We also wanted to look at players that were under and overperforming. So on the left, we have Miguel Cabrera and the very slow Albert Pujols. And we can use our intuition to understand that those players are underperforming their expected wOBA because of their speed. Albert Pujols is the slowest player according to sprint speed last year. So we want to account for that in our model somehow. On the right, we have players who are overperforming. We have, of course, Byron Buxton, who's the fastest player according to sprint speed. So we want to incorporate his sprint speed into our model, also with Jose Altuve. So to sum it all up, we have three areas that we want to improve. The first is improving the calibration of the model, specifically in the barrel area. The second, as we see Carlton Fisk waving his home run on, is that we want to incorporate home run direction, or hit direction. We know that it's easier to hit a home run down the left field line than it is to dead center. And the third is that we know that batter speed can impact infield hits. So we have players like Ichiro or D. Gordon who are able to use their speed to increase their expected wOBA. So we want to include that in the model. So the first component is improving model calibration. And there's a number of things that we want to consider here in order to improve the model. The first is that we have a highly nonlinear relationship. You saw that kind of orb-like heat map. So we want to capture that pattern somehow. And so one nonlinear technique is random forest. And so we use random forest here. And you can see that it's capturing the overall trend, but as you can see from the heat map and the calibration, it's a mess. It's all over the place. And that's because we only have two variables. It's a very low-dimensional problem. It's very hard for a tree-based algorithm to kind of capture all the nuances of how exit velocity and launch angle have an effect on hit probability. So when we look at a heat map like this, we feel a little more confident about our current model. Our current model does a little better than the random forest. So our current model is based on kind of a smoothing technique. And so we don't want to depart too far from that. But what we want to be able to do is have a more dynamic ability to search over different spaces when sample size allows. As we saw kind of in the barrel area, we were smoothing too much. So we have a lot of balls in that area, so we're more confident about our ability to predict in that area than we are, say, kind of at the extreme edges of our space. So when we take all of that into account, K-nearest neighbors is a great fit for our problem. I'll dig into a little bit about how K-nearest neighbor works, but Here's our heat map here. You can see it's doing a lot better in that barrel area zone, a little darker of a red. Importantly, our calibration chart, specifically for the 2017 season, is hugging that 45-degree angle line a lot better. So we're able to improve that. And I also line it up here comparing actual to the K-nearest neighbors to the current model. Again, a little hard to see, but you can see that the decision boundary for the barrel zone is much clearer defined using the K-nearest neighbor. So how does K-nearest neighbor work? I'm using this based off of some great work. There's a tutorial online by Scott Foreman Rowe. His example is using political affiliation, but we can easily adapt it for our hit probability problem. And so what we're trying to do here is model the decision boundary. And you can imagine our red cells are going to be a hit, and our blue cells are not a hit. And we're cheating a little bit here, as we know the actual decision boundary. That's going to be our dashed black line. And what we want to do is have our white cells align with that dashed black line. So the white cells are where we're predicting about 50% of a hit probability. And so the way K-nearest neighbor works is it's taking neighbors around it, so batted balls with similar profiles, as measured by Euclidean distance between the exit velocity and launch angle. And we're taking the average to determine the probability of a hit. So as you can see in our first chart, when we're taking one nearest neighbor, we're really just taking the actual probability of that exact ball. And as you can see, that's going to lead to a problem called overfitting. So we're severely overfitting our problem, and while we know exactly the hit probability of those balls, it's unlikely that this model is going to predict well out of sample. It's a low bias model. So what we want to do is introduce a little bias into the model to reduce our variance. And so how we do that is we increase the number of neighbors. So we're looking at more neighbors nearby. And as you can see, when we move the neighbors to around 20, our decision boundary looks a lot better. Those white cells are much more aligned with what we know as the true decision boundary. If we continue and add more and more neighbors, we're looking at balls that are farther away in the space, we lose a lot of precision, and we're not very confident in our ability to define that decision boundary. So this is kind of a high-level example of how K-nearest neighbor works. We're able to be a little more confident about defining that decision boundary, and we use cross-validation to identify our optimal K value. So moving on from the model calibration, our second component is the hit direction. And before we dig into the modeling, we wanted to look at whether or not batters have the ability to change their spray or hit direction to improve their outcomes. And a great example of this, and a lot of people have heard the example of David Ortiz batting against the shift. If David Ortiz, in this example, hits a weak ground ball down the third baseline, it's likely to be a hit, right? Because the defenders are nowhere near there. However, if someone else hits a weak ground ball down the third baseline, do we want to give that hitter less credit when they're batting against the standard defensive alignment? And in our current context-free model, we do not want to treat those balls differently. But before we reject out of hand whether or not hit direction is a skill, we wanted to spend a little time thinking about how batters may be able to change their hit direction to improve outcomes. So this is a quick example of looking at year-to-year changes in exit velocity, launch angle, and spray direction. Spray direction has been normalized to the batter side of the plate, so a negative spray direction is a pulled ball, a positive is going to the opposite field. So we're looking at the R-squared of the relationship between exit velocity and the change in weighted on-base average. And you can see on the left, there's an R-squared of 0.15. Not a perfect relationship, but we see a strong positive relationship there. As batters hit the ball harder, they're likely to realize better outcomes. On the next graph, we have the change in launch angle. In this example, we have a lot less obvious of a positive relationship. There is one. Likely, players have kind of, as the diamond case examples showed us, have kind of optimal launch angles. It's not a linear relationship. When we move to the spray direction, that relationship or less disappears. There doesn't appear to be any sort of positive or negative relationship for batters to have the ability to change their outcomes, at least at the season level. We also wanted to look at the batted ball level. So what we did is we built a model that incorporated hit direction. And we compared that model to our launch angle and exit velocity model, the two-variable model. What we wanted to look at is, could we find players that were able to, that model was able to identify better? The reason being is we're looking for players that it may be able to identify some sort of skill here. And when we incorporate all batted balls, it does appear that we found some sort of positive relationship around kind of the launch angle area of 0.03. But when we remove home runs, that relationship again disappears. And our takeaway here is that it's very hard to model, at least at the league level, a context-free level, an ability for players to improve their outcomes. Of course, as Tom Tango showed the other day, it does appear that some players are changing their patterns of how they hit the ball, at least at the spray angle level. But that's very highly dependent on how teams are defending them. And as we've noted, we're trying to strip out context in our current model framework. Where batters do have some knowledge of how their hit direction can improve outcomes is the fence length. Of course, the fence length is different in different ballparks, but we do know that it's not a perfect circle. As you can see on the left, if we're modeling the probability of a home run based off of a launch angle and exit velocity, we're really modeling based off of the expected distance of that ball. And so what we did is we used the Alan Nathan's indispensable baseball trajectory calculator to project a distance and then build a model to predict the probability of a home run. As you can see here, without incorporating the spray angle, we get kind of some odd findings here that are decision boundary for a home run to dead center is around 390 feet. As we know, fence lengths are different across the league, but it's closer to around probably 407 feet when we start to incorporate hit direction. So what we wanted to do is incorporate hit direction here, as batters do know some ability to use their hit direction to potentially hit more home runs to left or right field. So moving on to the third component of our addition to the hit probability model, and that is sprint speed. And what we wanted to ask ourselves is, can batter speed impact infield hits? And so what we did, of course, a batter speed is not going to help a blue single fall in front of the outfielders. But for topped or weakly hit ground balls, so these are going to be balls that are going to be in the infield, we do see a very highly linear relationship for a batter's sprint speed to be able to influence their ability to get on base. As you can see, batters with a sprint speed of around 24, towards the lower end of the spectrum, is below 140. Players, the fastest players in the league, around 29 feet per second, are over 220. So that's a clear positive linear relationship. Our current model doesn't account for that, so we wanted to incorporate that. As you can see, our augmented model allows us to model that. And the way that we did that is with generalized additive models. Generalized additive models allow us to predict our outcome variable using a number of smoothing functions on our predictor variables. And generalized additive models are very helpful in a number of ways. They're very flexible. They allow us to capture that really strong positive linear relationship that we saw on the sprint speed, as you can see in this partial dependency plot, while also accounting for the highly nonlinear effects of launch angle and exit velocity and the probability of being a hit. They also allow us to control a smoothing parameter to ensure that we're not overfitting our model to noise in our data. So what's the final results here? So we can look at our players that we looked at previously. We have Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols. We were able to decrease their expected weighted on-base average by about 5 points. Now that we know that they are slow players, that is something that the batter does have control over, their augmented model, expected weighted on base average drops a little bit. When we consider Jose Altuve, we increase his expected weighted on base average by 10 points. And our fastest player in the league, we increase his expected weighted on base average by almost 16 points. So that's Byron Buxton. So we do know some information about Byron Buxton that allow us to model his expected weighted on base average a little better. We also wanted to look at players who were able to use their pull or opposite field batter ball profile to increase the probability of hitting home runs. And a great example of this is Zach Cozart. We know he had a great year last year, and he actually had the highest pull percentage of his career last year. Sample size, he had a very small sample size his rookie year. But you can see, using Baseball Savant, we can see his scatter plot of his home runs. You can see he's pulling all of these. And because our model now knows that he's pulling the ball, he's more likely to hit a home run on those sorts of batted balls. So we're able to increase his expected weighted on base average by about 9 points. Another great example of this is Didi Gregorius. He takes a lot of advantage of the short porch in right in Yankee Stadium. We're able to increase his expected weighted on base average by about 5 points. Now, as a data scientist, I would love to have these perfectly aligned with the actual, of course, but it's important to note here that we're not taking in account the context. So we're not taking into account the actual short porch in Yankee Stadium. So the model does not know that Didi's playing in Yankee Stadium. So that's a reason that we're not getting all the way there. So next steps. We're planning on rolling this out before opening day, so we're very excited about that. I've been hammering on the context-free element of our model. We would like to eventually start looking into context-dependent statistics so that we're able to start explaining players that are able to, how they bat against the shift, things of that nature, how much Didi Gregorius is taking advantage of playing in Yankee Stadium. And so that's something that's kind of next on our agenda. Another thing that we'd like to look at is sprint speed in different facets of the game. So we're looking at things like sprint speed in the outfield, or in this chart, this is the sprint speed for players running to first on ground balls. And what I've done is compare two players who have very similar sprint speeds. David Freese and Robinson Cano both have sprint speeds around, I think it's 26. But you can see their distribution of how they run to first is very different. You can see that David Freese is running significantly harder to first, whereas Robinson Cano has slightly different distribution. And if you look at the outcomes, I think the sample size is around 50 batted balls. David Freese hit around 200 on those balls. Robinson Cano, unfortunately, didn't get any hits on those ground balls. Not very surprising. Before I open it up for questions, I wanted to thank Sabre for allowing me to present here. I'm incredibly honored to be able to be up here on the stage, and I'd like to thank everyone at MLB who's helped provide feedback and help guide this presentation to where it is today. And I'd like to thank all of you for being here at 8:30 on a Sunday morning. So with that, I'd like to open up for questions.
Hi, very cool stuff. Corey, please forgive him. I don't know if you've looked. Okay. Anyway, the sprint speed thing, I think, is something, and this may be for a long time down the road future study, one of the advantages with very fast players is that it's basically defense-oriented. You can throw off the defense if you're really, you know, booking it. And so it might be interesting to look at if there is some correlation, or almost, I don't know if you'd see two bins maybe, looking at exchange time or transfer time with fielding. You know, does the guy bobble the ball because he's hurrying to throw? Or the extent to which, I don't know if you guys are working on throw accuracy, but that would also be another one, because it might be an error. Errors would be the easiest, but then obviously it it's not going to go down as a hit. It would go down as an error. And I mean, of course, that's you see where I'm going.
Yeah,
with this.
No, I think that's a great question, and it gets kind of the context which we would love to start getting into, and it's definitely on our agenda. I'm a Mariners fan, so I love Ichiro Suzuki. I've seen a number of times where he's making the fielder rush the throw.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a skill. Another one is D. Gordon.
Right.
A great example is, you know, like I said, we're not getting all the way to the actual, and eventually we'd like to kind of start explaining at least why D. Gordon is overperforming so much of his expected.
But it's like I said, down the line, but
yes,
I think
exactly.
The data are there to actually show that, which would be pretty cool.
All right, thank you.